Blog Talk Radio.
Ticket in town, visit TorontoRock.com. Live on Blog Talk Radio. Candid Frank Live, the National Lacrosse League edition, with Aaron William Freeland, Gary Grube, sometimes Jared Harris, and Frank Stanishi. Tonight, we dial out and see who answers their phone.
Oh, hey, gosh. Frank.
How's it going, Aaron?
Good, Frank, you?
Good, Aaron. How are you, Aaron?
So?
Aaron.
Frank.
Aaron.
Don't make me reconsider that TFC ticket.
Well, somebody's got to use it. Okay, so there it is. We finally are down after a season of, a prayer. Get it? Wing and a prayer. Speaking of wing and a prayer, he's not answering his phone. I'm going to have to call him again and see what else we'll call him on the air and embarrass him by calling while we're on the air. By the way, Gary answered his phone, and he's on right now waiting for us to talk to him, acknowledge his presence.
I'm here. I'm live. See, I'm interactive.
What did I tell you? Wasn't I right? Yeah, I was. Okay, so here, let's see if he answers his phone this time. So, we got the prayer. We need the wing now. There it is. So, now we're flying on a wing and a prayer. Well, actually, a wing and two rocks. Hey, that's kind of weird. Wing and two rocks. Wing and two rocks. It don't
fly. We could weigh them down.
There you go. One on each wing. And speaking of weighing down a wing, are you there, Rocco?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, Rocco's here. Well, here it is, guys. I was just saying, we started this adventure in January. There were a lot of teams in the hunt. We have finally gotten to the point where there are only two teams in the hunt. This very past weekend, one team, the favorite, rose up and, reinvented themselves victorious, of course, that being Rochester. They won and did it what they needed to do, and that is win their regulation game against, of course, the Buffalo Banditos. And then they won the mini game. And an exciting mini game it was it not? Aaron, did you get a chance to peruse the video?
I did. It was fascinating. It was awesome. But that's basically what they designed it for, was they wanted to make it as exciting as possible. So in that, I think they definitely succeeded. So,
Go ahead. I jumped in.
In that respect, they succeeded, I think, marvelously. It definitely made things more interesting, put it that way. But I noticed that it seemed like an interesting tactic that the league favorite kind of used to get where they wanted to be. I mean, I know Buffalo's first game of the series last week, and then Rochester just blew their doors off in the first half. and just sort of sat back and kind of let them punch themselves out, I think.
Yeah,
I mean, when you look at what Rochester did in the second, third, and fourth quarters of the second leg, they played shutdown, lockdown defense.
Well, they played like the team we all knew that they could, right? I mean,
exactly.
I mean, Buffalo did a great job in game one. Did what they needed to do, and that is win at home, right, Rocco? They won at home. That's what they had to do, and they accomplished their goal.
Yeah, they needed to win at home, but then, yeah, as Aaron was saying, when you go into Rochester, you got to keep that momentum up. And they did that in the first quarter. You had a 4-4 tie at the end of the first quarter, but then Rochester pulled a play out of Buffalo's handbook. Buffalo ran off five in a row in the fourth quarter of game one. Rochester turns around, runs off five in a row to begin the second quarter. And that just took them right out of it. And like Aaron said, they played shutdown defense from that point on because both teams scored the same amount of goals in the whole second half. And what I said the week before and even, well, last week before I had to rush off and bring our dog to the vet for a cesarean section of two puppies, they had to shut down Johnny Tavares and Mark Steenhouse, which is what they did. They went from scoring eight goals combined to scoring two goals combined.
They were well worth the victory. Obviously, Rochester all year, even when they got themselves in trouble, you know, they worked away out of getting in trouble. And I was a guest of Gary Grube at one game against the Toronto Rock, Gary, and we saw that personally. We saw Rochester plop a backup goaltender in goal and literally disassemble the Toronto Rock, which probably led to them getting a new goaltender via Philadelphia and also change their attitude and go on a pretty good run.
Well, they're such an explosive team. It only takes 5 minutes for them to score 8-9 goals, and they're just relentless. And by the time they're finished with that, the other team doesn't know whether they're coming or going, and it takes them another 5 or 10 minutes just to try and reset themselves up. By that time, you know, you're already way, way behind. And Rochester's masters of this.
Yeah, don't give Rochester a chance to sit on a lead. Because once they're sitting on a lead, you're pretty much done. And they pretty much showed that. And in the first game, Buffalo did what they needed to do. And Rocco and I discussed it a couple of weekends ago. And it's all about basically the death trap that Rochester puts out there on the floor. Once they get the lead, they have so many guys that can counterpunch you to death. That you're really, it's almost impossible. And I don't think there was anything that proved it more that once Buffalo got in the lead, it is the Achilles heel of Rochester. If you get ahead of them, you have a chance. Then you got to fight to keep the lead. You know, Aaron, we watched quite a few games this year and you know, at the ACC and a lot of road games, the same thing. What we saw in the playoffs, wouldn't you say that was generally Rochester's season, the way they played? You know, they dug a hole for themselves, but not deep enough to not be able to jump out of?
I think so. I think they were experimenting with how many sandbags they needed to pile. Really what it boiled down to. I mean, they got the opening goal 3 minutes and 16 seconds in, and then Buffalo reeled off three straight, you know, and they ended the first quarter tied 4-4. So I think they found out just how much they were able to get away with. And after that, it was go time. I mean, you had Cody Jamison with two, Johnny Paulus with two, Joel McCready, and then Stephen Keough. And Cody Jamison got his goals in the first 3.5 minutes, and Johnny Paulus rounded off the first four with two goals in 39 seconds, looks like. Just pop, 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 pop. And that was pretty much all they needed. From there, they could just coast. So,
mind you, though, in fairness to Buffalo, I mean, I know what you're saying about coasting, but in legitimately speaking, it wasn't really coast. But you know, they had them at arm's length, but really, Buffalo just was stifled by the defense that Rochester employs, and you know, this is not a team that won two championships in a row in the National Lacrosse League by accident. They were full value for, you know, their victory against Buffalo, and they will be a tough opposition. We'll talk about the next series in a little bit.
Let's also not forget that for most of this game, they were without Dan Dawson, who got hurt very early, and they still pulled off this game very comfortably, losing one of their biggest offensive threats. So I think Rochester's been pretty good.
Yeah, but that's why their defense is so good, is that, you know, they can really overcome a lot of adversity and come from way back. You know, this isn't something they just did in this game, and I really believe that they proved in this final of the Eastern Conference what they're made of and their ability to play the complete game at appropriate times, you know, during the game. You know, it's pretty easy to be called a good defensive team. If you can play great defense at the right time and under the right circumstances, which you just identified, losing a key component to their team, and then allow their defense to pick up the ball and carry the team, that's a pretty good asset. And it's really a testament to how good that team is. And when one looks at what Rochester has done, one can only admire Buffalo and Toronto that much more, because it's been a pretty tough season for Buffalo and Toronto because of Rochester. Rochester really is full value. They didn't finish first by accident. They're not, you know, a big surprise playing in the championship game in the 2 weeks of the 22nd and the 29th of May. You know, it's no accident. They're full value for it. And, you know, if you're to talk about the goaltending, let's talk about the goaltending, Buffalo and Rochester. Rocco, was there anything in your mind that was a clear advantage in goal? And I'm going to ask all three of you guys, starting with Rocco.
I don't know if I would really call it an advantage. You know, Matt Vince was on his game. Anthony Cosmo was on his game. I mean, it came down to the defense shutting down the Buffalo offense. And it just makes Vince's job a whole lot easier. I mean, I was watching the game, and I think I heard Ian Lord's name more than I heard Matt Vince's name as far as block shots. I mean, Lord was just putting his body in front of, you know, every single shot. He didn't care where it was hitting him. So he had who knows how many saves compared to Matt, you know, on there. But, you know, you can't take anything away from Anthony Cosmo either. I mean, after a season that he had last year, to come back the way he played for this season and to lead Buffalo to where they were and to come just oh so close. I mean, the score of 13-8 could have been a lot worse if it wasn't for Cosmo making some big-time saves. Because, you know, like I said earlier, you shut down Steenhouse, you shut down Tavares, and you shut down Benesch as well. Between the three of them, they had three goals. So you basically put it on Dane Smith with a hat trick and Jamie Rooney with two goals. They were the only multiple goal scorers for the Bandits. So they put a clamp down on those three, and it made Vince's job a lot easier. But when Vince was called upon, he came up huge. And he's going to need to do that this weekend.
Yeah, so he wasn't overwhelming, but he was there when necessary. And we always hear and talk about, when it comes to goaltenders, that it's not how many, it's which one at what time. So when you have that on your side, it's, you know, when you have the goaltender that can play the situation, that's a strength that, you know, belies his talent, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, you have him in there, and I mean, Buffalo only got 35 shots on goal. How often do you see a team get 35 shots on net in a game? Usually that's the number almost, you know, through the first half, you know, in half of these games.
There you go.
35 shots total, 27 saves. That tells you, you know, how many, I'm trying to look and see how many shots.
About 50. high 40s, low 50s.
Yeah,
43 shots.
Yeah, 43 shots, 35 ended up on goal. So, I mean, it was just, well, I'm talking as far as for Vince. I'm trying to, there's not.
On a regular basis. On a regular
stat there, yeah.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. And yes, I suggest somewhere, you know, in the 40s, middle 40s to low 50s, maybe rise up to the, you know, the high 50s. And we've seen, you know, 60 shot games. But, and I think your point is well taken that, you know, these guys, when you're playing at this level and at this point in the season, one thing that's guaranteed, Aaron, is that, and I'm speaking now to a goaltender, well, not a very good one, but a goaltender nonetheless.
Love you too, Frank.
but you know, I'm talking to a guy who understands about goaltending, all kidding aside. Yeah, and you know, Aaron, it isn't how many, it's which ones you stop. You know, there's goals you can let in. I'm not saying that, you know, that there are no goals that matter. It's just that there are goals that hurt more than others. And, you know, the sign of a great goaltender is to make the key save at the key time, and that's what helps a team win, right?
No, most definitely. I mean, you could be getting shelled in a game. You could be losing 10-3, 10-4, but the right stop at the right time by the goalie could be just enough to light a fire under the team that they can actually you know, come through. And it's this oftentimes. So, you know, it is really all about the timing. When the goalie makes the save is just as important as the total number of saves that you're going to see. It's all fortuitous timing is really what it breaks down to. But I am going to say without Cosmo in goal, he could have been a lot worse.
And so would you suggest then that Cosmo played better in goal?
Based on the number of shots that we're looking at here, Rochester took 43 shots and Cosmo stopped 30 of them. Buffalo took 35 shots and Vince stopped 27. All told, save percentages work out roughly even. But honestly, when you look at that game, it looked like Matt had an easier time of it than Anthony did. So it's tough to just go based on that.
All right. Gary, you have any ideas, thoughts, goaltending but in that game?
Well, I thought that Cosmo kept him in the game because during that second quarter when things were going completely off-center for them, he was still there making saves because it could have been a whole lot worse than it was. And that could have just deflated that team altogether. And he put together a terrific second half that brought that team right back into it and gave them the life that they almost pulled off the upset of upsets in the mini game.
Absolutely. They did do what they needed to do, and that is win that first game at home. And unfortunately, Rochester rose up. And that mini game, you know, I mean, more than anything, it gives us, you know, not pause, but It gives us reason to reflect on how close these teams are in ability. When you look, you know, the Rock don't play, you know, to their potential a little bit, and it's the difference to allow Buffalo to beat them. And if not for a break here or there, you know, Buffalo could have beat Rochester as well. And to me, it shows that in the National Lacrosse League that if you're not ready to play your game, if each of your players are not ready to play their game, the one, the plan that the coach has, do you think it was more of a mastery by Rochester and their game plan over the Buffalo game plan? It sounds as though the goaltending was you guys favor Vince in as far as the job. Sorry, not Vince, Cosmo in the job that he did over Vince of Rochester. How about the coaching plan? Do you think the coaching plan had any effect on the outcome? I'll start this time with you, Gary.
Well, the funny thing was that in the mini game, when Buffalo took the 1-0 lead and they were playing Troy's system, I really was starting to get a little nervous for Rochester. I didn't think they were going to be able to tie it. And time was waning down and waning down, and they did wind up tying it, but they were playing Cordingley's system. And as long as they use that system, the system is there to win, and it's a proven system over the last number of years. So as long as they stuck to it, they were going to succeed. So, yeah, I think the coaching system had a lot to do with this.
And it appeared that Rochester's game plan was enough to nullify Buffalo to the point where they did and were the winners?
Well, yeah, and they scored a typical goal in the overtime with Vitarelli putting it over Cosmo's shoulder to win it, and it was on a transitional break. So, you know, everything worked the way it did all year long.
Okay, how about you, Aaron? You know, the game plan, was it the difference?
At this point, I'm going to have to go with yes. I mean, all year, Troy's been looking to make a statement. You know, after The Rock released him last year for reasons that are still unknown, and I'm not going to speculate on them because it's not my business, he was out to prove something. He was out to prove that his style of coaching and his game plan would actually work. He went to a Buffalo team that was in complete disarray after the last season, brought them all the way back to the brink, and almost got them into the finals. So, you know, this was a question of validation for Troy, making sure that his system, you know, proving to those that would get rid of him that his system actually works.
And it came very close to accomplishing the ultimate goal, didn't it?
Exactly, and. I can't say that there isn't a certain amount of FU involved in his game plan because of who he was playing in the semifinals, but it came very, very close to succeeding. And given a little bit more luck, maybe, they might have been able to pull it off. Who knows?
Well, let's be honest, Aaron. Nothing motivates a man or a woman, or specifically an athlete, than perceived rejection. And I don't think any of us can hide from the fact that Cordingley had every right to feel rejected and even more motivated, wouldn't you say, Rocco?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you let go of a coach that has the talent of Troy Cordingley. I mean, we talked about it before about how you have to respect the man. You know, as much as you may hate him because he coaches against your team, or how he goes on his tirades by putting the one foot on the dashboard, looking like he wants to jump back out onto the floor. You got to respect what he can do. And yeah, he wanted to prove a point to the Toronto Rock. I mean, 2 years in a row they got knocked out. First or second round, what have you, and then last season that debacle that I believe was about 23-10 or whatever it was against Minnesota just took them apart. They felt like they needed a change, and his mission from the beginning was to prove to Toronto that they made a wrong decision, and it looks like maybe they did, maybe they didn't. I mean, you can't base it just on one season. Yes, his team defeated Toronto in the first round of the playoffs in Toronto. But when you look at the whole aspect, maybe Buffalo should have been the number one seed with the way they started off the season. So kind of, I guess you could say balanced it out in a way. But I think what happened was Hazen, they weathered the storm of the Bandits coming out strong in that first quarter, and in the second quarter they just played Hawk lacrosse and just took every bit of momentum that they had out of them.
And they were very successful in doing that. And I think I got all three. Did I get all three of you on the players on the plan? Right. We got.
Yes.
Now, what about the play of the teams by their coaches? By their offense. My bad, misspoke. Aaron, you go first this time.
You mean how did they match up offensively, and how was it all spread out?
Let's talk about the offense and how they did in making things successful.
Well, again, you look at the standbys for Rochester. You got Dawson, you got McCready, you got Jameson, and you got Paulus. Those guys came up with them huge again. You know, it's something that those are their go-to guys. Cody Jameson and Johnny Paulus are really their go-to guys for this sort of thing. And they performed exactly as expected. Dan Dawson, before he left the game, 2 goals on 2 shots. That's phenomenal shooting. You know, that's absolutely lights-out shooting. You look at the big guns for Buffalo, Benesh, 1 goal, 2 assists, so he was shut down. Steinhaus, 1 goal, 1 assist, he was shut down. Tavares, 1 goal, 1 assist. He was shut down. You can't rely on young guys like Dane, and you can't rely on guys like Jamie Rooney to come through big for you. The thing that Buffalo seriously lacks is secondary scoring. Sean Williams was invisible. Joe Rizzo-Terrence was invisible. You know, Rory Smith, again, invisible. These guys are the guys that they need to step up when their top guns are getting shut down, and unfortunately, it wasn't spread around enough for them to do that.
No, it was not, and that is a problem for any team to, you know, getting the ship headed in the right direction and keeping it there is so difficult. And Aaron, if I were to ask you, you know, on the offensive side, who would you think was the plus for the winning team and also the minus for, like, what was the difference offensively? Who, in your opinion, played, you know, as expected or above their head, over their head, and who, in fact, was shut down? Which names would you bring out at this point, having watched the game and seen the result?
Well, I mean, just based on, you don't even necessarily have to have seen the game. You can just look at the stat sheets and see the ones that got shot down were the ones that were supposed to come up huge. And again, that's, you know, the old standbys. It's Tavares, that's Benesh, that's Sean Williams. These guys, pointless for the most part or not their usual production. The guys that stepped up huge were the guys that were expected to step up huge, which is, you know, on the balance of things, the way it's supposed to work. I mean, you look at Dawson, you look at Jameson, you look at Paulus. There's the 8 goals right there. If Buffalo isolates on them and shuts those guys down, the game is Buffalo's. So, you know, the people that were expected to step up big stepped up big, and the ones for Rochester at any rate, and the ones that were supposed to step up for Buffalo, unfortunately, looks like they missed the bus. So, what are you gonna do?
Gary, what do you think? I mean, offensively, both these teams had the horses. They had, you know, Buffalo having probably one of the greatest players in lacrosse history, and they did get shut down. What made that happen in your mind? What shut Buffalo down, and why didn't their offense do as well as they could have done? And did Rochester's offense do that well?
Well, Rochester's offense did the same as they've been doing all year, and because they've been doing it for the last few years, I think very quietly they've gone underneath the radar all year long by doing it. And guys like Jameson, guys like Paulus, Vitarelli, these guys have been around all year doing the same thing. So doing it in the playoff games doesn't really surprise me. But we've been talking about it for a lot of weeks, about Rochester's defense and how stifling they can be. Well, we saw firsthand how stifling they can be. You know, they took, like you said, the greatest player in lacrosse and made him basically invisible. You took Steinhaus and made him basically invisible. You took Rizzo-Terrence and he was invisible. Sean Williams, if he didn't have a penalty, I didn't even know he was on the floor. And they continually did this through a game and a half. And they never had any let up. There never was a point that you could say, oh my God, are they going to falter? They were so consistent. And they stuck with their system so well that it really didn't make much of a difference what Buffalo was going to do.
And they really didn't get to accomplish what many thought they could. You know, they had me convinced after that first game that it's quite possible that these guys could end up winning in Rochester. But it didn't happen, and it didn't happen because Rochester basically came up with the game plan. Offensively, Rochester did what they needed to do. And Rocco, it is amazing how some teams look like they can at will dominate a team. And this team, Rochester, I think in years have had that, you know, that truculent nature, if I can borrow a hockey term, and they're able to, you know, master a team, it seems, almost at will. It's just amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I just want to piggyback on what Aaron and Gary were saying about, you know, the big guns showing up, and they're the ones that, you know, you look at stats, Cody Jameson, 3 goals, 5 assists. That's a typical game for him when he needs to turn it up. But the player that stood out for me, that really stood out, and nobody mentioned it, Joel McCready. Okay, McCready had 2 goals and 3 assists in that 13-8 game, and he had a goal in the 10-minute game. He tied that game up with 2:22 to go, which was a very big goal for them there when Buffalo, you know, kind of took that 1-0 lead. So he really stood out. He had 3 goals in, you know, the whole entire day, just as, you know, Cody Jameson and Johnny Powers had. So McCready was the one who really stood out for me in that game. I mean, yeah, Dan Dawson, 2 goals on 2 shots. Johnny Powers had his hat trick. Cody with his hat trick. That's almost like standard, you know, anymore with the, you know, the Nighthawks. But Joel McCready really stepped up big with 2 goals and 3 assists in that game. But yeah, with the Nighthawks offense, I mean, how can you stop them? You know, you gotta have a tough defense. You gotta keep the ball away from them. You can't allow them to get any type of possessions. And when we get to talking about the championship series, that's where I think they're going to run into problems.
On that note, one final thing we could talk about, and to me, that's an important factor. Defense. It may be part of the team plan, but highlight for me, guys, the defenders that did well in this game and the defenders that maybe didn't do so well for Buffalo. You know, and the ones that played well, you know, just on the defender side of the game, how much of a factor was defense in this game? Aaron, I'll start with you this time.
Well, obviously during the first game, before the mini games actually got started, defense was absolutely huge. You look at the guys that were playing for Rochester, you know, Paul Dawson, you look at Dylan Evans, you look at a couple of the other guys that were playing D for them. These guys stepped up massively. These guys held Buffalo to, in the last half of the game, they held them to 23 shots over 3 quarters. And speaking from personal experience, you're not going to win many games if you're only getting 23 shots. The fact that they were able to step up huge and shut them down was good. Billy D. Smith, with his 4 penalty minutes for Buffalo, I thought was slightly disappointing. Same with Derek Suttons. I mean, they both took penalties that they didn't need to take. You know, I mean, there was a bit of a Donnybrook in the middle of the first third of the second quarter. Buffalo came out on top in that one with 2 Rochester Nighthawks going to the box. But then Billy D takes a slashing minor at 8 minutes, you know, in the second quarter. It's completely unnecessary. And this is a reversion to old bad habits. As for face-offs, Jay Thornburg was outstanding, winning 60% of his draws. You know, I mean, he played well. He played a good game for him. But it just seems Buffalo couldn't get the entire team in the same place at the same time. You know, I mean, their offense showed up for the first quarter, and then that was it. And the defense was still on the 90. At least that's the way it looked. And it's disappointing because Buffalo had a really good first half of the season and played really well against Toronto in the one-and-done game. But what are you going to do, you know? And again, it's a tale of two teams. One team, everybody who was expected to step up, stepped up. And for the other team, the people that were expected to didn't. So I'm not, you know, I'm at a loss as to explain how it could collapse so completely.
How do you feel, Gary, about your revelation on the game and the defense of both the teams? How would you judge their defenses?
Well, I say we've talked about Rochester a number of times and saying how they're so dead on with their systems, and they don't make very many mistakes, and you're in trouble if you're playing from behind. Buffalo, on the other hand, I got to give them credit for most of this. And the first game, a good chunk of the second game, and the overtime and the mini game, is they did stick with Troy's system, and they achieved results. But every now and again, that old Bandits team seems to come rearing its ugly head, and out come a few of the penalties, and bang, very quickly, they're playing from behind, which is suicide against Rochester, as we know. And you get it from the usual offenders. You know, you get it from the Billy Dees. You get it from the guys who aren't fast enough anymore, the Sean Williams. And, you know, granted, they only had a couple of penalties, but the timing of it all was death to them, really. But, come through the mini game and the overtime, they were back on track, even with a Priolo penalty. And they played the system and almost pulled it off.
I think almost is generous, maybe. Rocco, what do you think defensively, these two teams?
Well, yeah, like I said in the beginning, when we started, when we talked about the goaltending, Ian Lord stepped up huge for the Nighthawks. He's been doing this all season. If he's defending a player, whether it be Tavares or Steinhaus or Dane Smith or whoever's taking the shot, he's putting his body in front of it. Yeah, you know, he's like another goaltender out there. So he came up big. Scott Campbell came up big when he was out there on defense, even getting a goal and two assists in the game. So he really played huge out there. But my standout would be, I would lean more towards Ian Lord. Sid Smith had a great game out there. Scott Self, Paul Dawson. I mean, it's just they're so well-rounded on the defensive side as well as the offense. But I would give the edge there to Ian Lord. As far as Buffalo on the negative side, I got to kind of agree with Aaron, with Rory Smith, not getting anything, and Billy D. Smith picking up that penalty at the 8-minute mark after they had a power play which could kind of get them back into the game in that second quarter. It just kind of took everything out of it. You could see the game getting chippy, and the referees were trying to keep a lid on it, and also at the same time allowing the teams to play it out, which was really great because I thought they would have been calling everything imaginable, but they let these teams, play it out, and the teams were really, I guess you could say, pushing the envelope, because in this game, if you got thrown out, you were done for the second mini game. So they were really letting a lot go at times. Just giving a couple unsportsmanlike conducts here and there, and the roughing calls. But Billy D. Smith, Derek Sutton, they just didn't come up big when they needed to. And when you've seen that 5-goal run by Rochester to start the second quarter, that just kind of took everything away. So now you wonder, what is Troy Cordingley going to do now, going into next season, as far as for his defense and his offense?
Yeah, there's a lot, Aaron, that one has to look at as far as the way these teams ended up victorious, and they both deserve all the credit in the world for getting to this point, the Eastern Final. It's been a tough road. Let's add, in your opinions, guys, a couple of stories or a story, a storyline, a result, a game, a highlight of the Eastern Division, if you would, you know, a couple of minutes of your opinion of how, you know, the East was won, if you will. And I'll start with you, Gary. Highlights or any comment? The Eastern Division had some interesting stories. The season went kind of interesting. What stood out in your mind?
Well, you know, the battle for third, what I thought was the interesting story this year. It looked like Buffalo had first place sewn up for the first half of the year until they had their monumental 8-game losing streak. But Rochester all the way through hung on with Buffalo. So they only lost 3 games all year, so they hung out very, very nicely. But I thought that the most interesting thing was the battle for third between Philadelphia and Toronto, and for a brief time, Minnesota. But the Philly-Toronto battle coming right down to that game where Toronto won 10-9 with Miller and Net, of all things, I thought that battle all year round was something really to watch, because that was where all the interest was.
Yeah, the irony was not lost on me either. I mean, the ironic result I guess the adventure that Miller was on was an interesting one that took him from Philadelphia to Toronto, and being a key member of the Toronto team to win. It was an amazing experience. I have to agree with you. I guess that's as good a cue as I can give Rocco. I guess you can pick up on that and then throw your story out there. What's the storyline of interest to you, game or set of games or race that you think of in the East?
Well, I mean, I probably would say that you're probably going to think that I'm going to say the Philadelphia-Toronto showdown with the little mix of the Minnesota Swarm in there. That was a great battle. But when you're going to the Wings games week in and week out, and you see them win, I believe, 2 out of 9 home games the whole entire season, it doesn't really make things really that interesting. I mean, you should be able to win your home games. If they would have won more than 25% of their division games, they might have had a chance at the playoff spot. But my big story is how Buffalo started the season. They were beaten soundly, as accordingly you said, by the Wings, 17-13 in that game, and how they responded back. They end up going 8-2, and then all of a sudden they just go right down the slide. And the whole season, while that's going on, Rochester just kept running at a set pace. It's kind of like almost running a marathon. They tell you don't start out quick because you're going to run out of breath, okay, and you're going to start falling back. Well, that's just what happened. Okay, I got a race down here with my dogs. As you can hear.
You want to leave it there and take care of the insanity, and we'll move
Okay. No, I'm fine. The one dog weighs about 8 pounds, chased a cat down the steps. They ran around the chair and ran right back up the steps.
Okay, so they're just doing their thing.
Their thing, yeah. which is a normal night here. It's just, like I said, I'm relating it to a marathon where Buffalo started out strong, and then they kind of faltered at the end. They ran out of breath. Rochester kept up the same pace. They didn't let Buffalo's 2-3-game lead get them down or anything like that. They just played, as people in Rochester say, Nighthawk lacrosse. And they just kept it going at the same pace. And it just slowly, as they always say, cream will rise to the top, and that's just what happened in the East. Rochester just did what they had to do. They went from 7-9 the last two seasons to 14-4. I mean, that's unreal. The only thing that separated them and Edmonton for the best record overall was Edmonton beating them twice.
Mm-hmm.
So they just kept their pace. They just ran their race to do it. So I would say it was Buffalo's falter towards the end, the last 8 games, and Rochester just keeping up their normal pace to just slowly close that gap and just take control.
Well, I think that's a fair statement. Of course, we all wish that Rochester, you know, the best of luck in the next series. Now, I forgot which one do I have left for moment of the or moment or whatever in the East. Was it Gary or Aaron? I'm totally confused. Which one of you didn't?
Aaron, I believe.
Aaron. Yeah. Okay, Aaron.
The teacher forget about him though.
It's good. Well, no, you know what? He can't make a save during the game, but let's see if he can save this segment. Over to you, buddy.
I'll be honest, watching the East was a complete and total crapshoot this year, but I loved every minute of it. From Buffalo roaring out to that early fantastic start to cratering later in the season to Rochester just playing slow and steady the entire season long. I had high hopes for Minnesota. I had them finishing higher than they did, but, you know, it's always full of surprises. Philadelphia and Toronto, that was an entertaining battle for third place. I was glad to see how that turned out. Sorry, Rocco.
I didn't even have them picked to get into the playoffs this year.
Hey, they made a go of it towards the end, so, you know. And I do have to admit, it's got to be disheartening if you only see them win twice at home. That's always an issue. You know, it's hard to keep fans interested that way. Lord knows the Rock had seasons like that between 2005 and 2009. But, you know, at the end of it all, it was a really entertaining season. The team that played the most consistent and the most steady ended up in first, which is as it should be. And Buffalo and Toronto, two woefully inconsistent teams at different times in the season, ended up swapping places for second and third. So, you know, you can't get much more drama than that, which is awesome.
Absolutely. Totally true. Not a single misstep in your language there. I'll tell you, if you were playing goal, that would have been a shutout.
Even if he was playing goal, it wouldn't have been a shutout.
Oh, I see it's open season on poor Aaron. Come on, stop. He's going to take me to a soccer game. I don't want him punching me in the arm the whole game. So summarize for us. I know I just asked you the big moments in the East, but summarize us the season from a fan's perspective, and if a new fan was looking at lacrosse, and what did you see that spirited you a little bit in regards to fan enjoyment? And you can include your visits to live games and stuff like that. And then also, you know, on the good side, that would be that. And on the bad side, what kind of improvements in the fan experience can you see in the East, whether it be for your team or whatever? Just, you know, from a fan perspective, Gary, I know one thing that you'll mention, but I won't mention it because I don't want to steal your thunder. What improvements would you like to see in the fan experience, and what have you enjoyed in the fan experience? From your view, you have gone to other towns, so there's a pretty wide perspective that you can share.
Well, definitely. Generally speaking, I like the presentation that the Rock give, and they do a lot of things very, very well. Now that we've fixed the music in there, maybe we can bring it down maybe a notch or two that we can hear ourselves think or hear ourselves cheer would be another thing without megaphones.
Hey,
you know, old ones don't have the...
Hey.
Well, you know it's a strong megaphone if Aaron's looking down going, what's that noise?
I can do that almost without a megaphone.
We know.
You still need a say, Frank?
The only reason I need the megaphone is so that I have some voice left the next day.
yet all of us are going, what? 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 For about 3 days afterwards. But generally speaking, the Rock do a lot of things very, very well in their game day presentation. Now, for their game itself, God, I would love to see a face-off man come to this city. I'd love to see us win more than two face-offs in a game. I'd love to see some big defensemen come in here. I'd love to see, you know, solid guys just, you know, pushing people off instead of being pushed around. And, of course, let's hope that Garrett Billings has a complete healing.
That's I want a solid gold crapper too, Gary, but that's just not going to happen.
Well, let's go with a face-off guy. I'll start with that one.
Well, you they're getting into the fixes for you know, The Rock, and I have to say this, and I'm going to say this because it just kills me, because I am nowhere near you know, the smartest guy when it comes to lacrosse. I have a lot more experience than people would give me credit. But two things that bothered me all season are, and you guys know from the very beginning, face-offs and goaltending. And it wasn't that I was questioning the goaltender. I made it very clear, I think. My problem wasn't with Rosie. It was the team defense that Rosie was a part of. And it really bothered me. And they did nothing about it until late in the season. It looked as though they, corrected the problem. Unfortunately, they didn't have it. You know, I'm tagging on to you there, Gary. They didn't have the ability to overcome the injury to Garrett Billings because, quite frankly, they couldn't win a faceoff, which bothered me at the beginning of the season. And I'm going to throw both of you under the bus, and you both at that time said, well, it isn't that big a deal. And I know why you said it wasn't that big a deal, because it isn't if you win your share of faceoffs. But if you don't win any faceoffs, like you've mentioned, Gary, it is very difficult because your possession percentages that turn into goals have to be that much higher. It puts more pressure on your team to convert because, you know, there's one thing in lacrosse that is very similar to basketball, and that is that there's a pretty good scoring rate when you have possession. And unfortunately, if you don't possess the ball, you know, at least 60% of the time, I'll say even 65% of the time, then you're not going to win because the conversion rates by teams is very similar. You know, the only difference is that you get the odd save that a goaltender makes. You know, that's about it. And Toronto, I don't think I'm that big a genius, and we saw that there was a problem with their faceoffs, and they never rectified it. And then when Billings got hurt, that weak link in their game became a big link in their game, and it really brought the house down, if you will. This is a team that was set and ready, and I don't think any of us will disagree that if The Rock played the way they're capable of playing, plus win a couple of faceoffs, the result would have been far different. And I really, truly believe in that game the faceoffs was the factor. I mean, the goaltending wasn't. Saves were made that needed to be made. That problem was resolved. But they just weren't converting on their possessions in a manner that was even anything close to their ability. They were god-awful when they possessed the ball, especially late in the game. And I don't know how you fix that other than, you know, you have to get the basics in control, and that would be the Toronto thing that I think needs to be done. If you're the Wings in Philadelphia, as a Philadelphia fan, I would like to see a team that plays more consistently, that has the ability to come up big when necessary. And, you know, I hate to say this because it's so cliche, but, you know, sometimes when people say it, you know, it's about the way the team plays and it's about the personality they put out there. The Wings need a personality. Whatever the heck it is, you know, show us what it is. Show us what it is. Show Rocco what it is. Show him the personality that you have, whether it be you're a strong defensive team, a strong offensive team, or a team that's diligent and works hard and waits for other teams to make mistakes and or have a counterpunch. Something, if you're those fans. But on the good side in the East, we saw a really, really wonderful battle for first, believe it or not, that only became anticlimactic because a team that has it all together, has all the parts necessary to become a champion, and in this case a third-time champion, is the team that was in that division. Both Buffalo and Toronto had inconsistent seasons, and basically that made it that much easier for Rochester. So I guess what I'm saying is a consistent season for both Buffalo and Toronto, something they didn't have this year. You know, our friends in Philadelphia, to whom we respect a lot because of Rocco, our buddy here on the program, a little more of a personality that shows something that the fans can, you know, get to sink their teeth into, if you know what I mean. So, yeah, it was a great season in the East for different reasons. It was also a frustration for some fans, but that's got to happen. Not everybody can win, so please don't send me cards and letters and emails saying that you're putting down our team. No, I'm just simply highlighting the pros and cons of the Eastern Division, and you know, it was a great season in the Eastern Division, and really, except for, like I said, a little more consistency from the Wings, they could have been in the hunt to take down Rochester, but I don't think it was meant to be. Rochester's well put together, and they were able to handle the new rules, the new system. Some might even suggest that it worked to their advantage, but I think basically, I'm not saying that, to use Aaron's phrase, I don't think Buffalo was sandbagged. I just think Buffalo wasn't good enough. Did we all get a chance to talk about the East?
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So the East is the East, and the West is the West. The question is, which will be best, or the West? We'll take a short break. We'll be back after this.
Joe with a regular job. I'm your average
white. Oh, by the way.
Least I'd like snob. I like porno and Proline and books about porn. I got an average house with nice hardwood floors. My wife, my job, my kids and my car. My feet on my table and a Cuban cigar. But sometimes that just ain't enough to keep a man like me interested. No way. Now I gotta wear double blue and hit the subway downtown. Yeah, 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 yeah. I need football big on a really big field. No silicone cheerleaders. I want my chicks real. I'm an Argo.
He's an Argo.
I'm an Argo.
Yo,
I fly to D.C. and hide all their weed. I go to Regina and say, how about that wheat? I'm an Argo.
He's an Argo.
I'm an Argo. Yo, I park in Commonwealth and take Edmonton spaces while Edmonton people make Edmonton faces. I'm an Argo.
He's an Argo.
I'm an Argo.
What a big Argo.
Oh, yo, yo. Oh, yo, yo.
Maybe I shouldn't be singing this song. Raving, raving and carrying on. Maybe they're right when they say that I'm wrong.
Nah, I'm an Argo.
He's an Argo.
I'm an Argo.
Yo.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get myself one of those Condridge Holloway mesh jerseys circa 1982 with the midriff showing, just like those skanky Queen Street Lady Gaga wannabes, and walk right into Harbor 60, and there's nothing nobody can do about it. Yeah. And I'm going to talk about the Argos on the radio anytime I want, because unlike that 60-year-old from The Fan who wears sunglasses on TV, I actually go to the games. Okay. They can take their 20 years of boring people with their Dungeons & Dragons staff and have a great big 20-year-old cakewalk right in the middle of Young Street, and it will make a lick of difference. You know why? Because we got the bombs. Yeah! We got Schultz, Dunnigan, frickin' Naylor, and frickin' Randorf. I'll tell you what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna get Bill Simons, Joel Kroll, Terry Greer, and frickin' Don Mohn, and a giant case of Crown Royal, and we're gonna go right down!
Hey, you know what, pal? You really are an Argo.
Just shut up and sing the song, pal.
I'm an Argo!
He's an Argo!
I'm an Argo!
He's an Argo!
Argo!
I'm an Argo.
He's an Argo. He's an Argo. He's an Argo. He's an Argo. He's an Argo. Let's go.
All right. So, I just wanted to put that in there because, well, I had a few phone calls a few messages about the intensity of the CFL fans, and they were trying to bleed over into my National Lacrosse League time, but I, being the loyal and forthright man, said no. I made a commitment, and I'm sticking to it. But to be a nice guy to the CFL fans, I thought I'd throw that in, and I'd give a couple of quick comments about the letter the commish sent to us fans, us season ticket holders. I opened it up, and at first I asked Serge Develutien. I said to Serge, I said, Serge, he said, Frank. I said, Serge, he said, Frank. I said, Serge, he said, Frank. That sounds like what Aaron and I did at the beginning of the program. He wanted to know how I felt about his letter, and I will be talking about the letter on Friday, and I might even put something together that shows how I feel. And my feelings are, how shall I say, should I put it this way or that way? My feelings are the CFL is a great league about Canadian football with Canadian fans, following and cheering for Canadian players with an equal dab of, surreptitiously brought in players that are of American extraction, much like Rocco. Well, no. Not like Rocco, because to be like Rocco, you'd have to be from Philly. And Philly cheesesteak, which is not to be confused with, New England cheesecake, is a strong, strong personality. And I discussed earlier about the personality of the Philadelphia Wings. If they're going to fly next year, with, some style and grace and something that will, style and grace and maybe first place. Do I sound like a rapper? Anyway, the only rapping I've ever done is at Christmas and Ask My Wife. I don't do much of that either. So basically it's all about having fun. And right now, when leagues threaten to go on strike because two very important parties can't get along, and in this case it would be the players and the owners represented by Mr. Cohan. And I don't know how many million have been served at the CFL. But I do know that his dad, Sir, bragged about what he sold on a sign in front of the store, being the big poobah of McDonald's. This American guy, he was born in the U.S., but, he's as Canadian as anyone not born in Canada. He does understand the game, and he does understand business. And he's done yeoman service, and I'm not referring to the York kind. He's done a masterful job in making this league a better place. And he has put together the league and TSN together. And no one can question the job that TSN has done in giving fans of the CFL an opportunity to feel that their league is important. And, it starts with the broadcasters, the guys on air that you listen to. And is there anybody better, any other play-by-play man in sports in Canada that is better than Chris Cuthbert? Not really. So, they've got a good thing going. So here we are. Momentum is with us. We are ready for a great year. I've paid the majority of my season tickets, the bill, for them, because, as we don't pay all at once. We pay in partitions, in portions that the team automatically, after an agreement we made, takes money out, periodically. Now, the estate of Frank can't afford to spend money in places where he doesn't get enjoyment. I'm not on any leash. My wife is very kind and generous with the money that I can spend. And it's something that I'm glad about. And it's one way that I spend my money to have fun. Now, hey, wake up. I'm talking to you. God, I hate when people snore when I'm talking to them. Anyway, I guess what I'm trying to say in a roundabout way is, guys, players, owners, take a look in the mirror and just say to yourself, what can I do to get back on the field? Or what can I do to not delay the season? What can I do that's fair? Here I sit today. The game is in better shape than it's been in years. The game is being played and watched by more people than in years. The game, the Grey Cup game, is a game that we all love and enjoy. It is, after all, more Canadian than anything else. It's more Canadian, I think, it's past the Stanley Cup. I mean, just take a look at the Stanley Cup. How long has it been and how often has it been that Canadian teams have done well? We're so glad reporters here brag on the fact that back in 93, the Montreal Canadiens won the Stanley Cup. Do these people know the difference between 1993 and 2014? You know, we ride the Leafs because they didn't, we were riding the Leafs when they didn't win the Cup in 20 years. We're talking now, a country that hasn't won the Cup. So before I digress too far, every year the CFL, at least now will, because there aren't any American teams in the league, we're guaranteed of one thing. One Canadian city can hold up with pride the fact that their city and their representative in the CFL won the Grey Cup. As a Canadian, we don't have many opportunities to do that. So please, gentlemen, don't take this tiny little thing that we have away from us. It's just one little tiny corner in our lives, the CFL. It's not a very big area. It's not a place where we're crowding each other out. It's a place where there's a, let's just say, a little more room for support. So please, let's not head in the other direction. Don't lose one single day of training. Don't lose anything close to that. Please do me a favor. Settle this thing like decent people instead of businessmen. Because there's one thing that we've learned in life. The difference between a businessman and decent people is the size of the Grand Canyon. This is a sport. Show some sportsmanship. This is a sport where we all should take something away from the game that's at least that at least has a semblance of fairness. And the biggest thing I'm going to say that's a negative to Mr. Cohan, whom I respect a lot. In his letter, he used the word share and then proceeded to say, we're not going to. Silence is golden. Sometimes, you know, you have to say nothing, and that emphatic silence is just so advantageous. So, guys, sorry about taking you away from your lovely game. And I just wanted to say that because I got messaged a few times, and I got some phone calls from people saying, yeah, you know, you should do a football show tonight because of what happened. Well, I didn't, and I'm glad I didn't because you guys have done a masterful job in the first half. But do me a favor. Okay, don't let it get to your head so that we have a bomb for a second half. So let's go over to the West. And we've established that Rochester was well worth, you know, being in the championship and representing the East. And I guess the first thing I'll say is I think it's fair to say two things at this point. No surprise that Rochester won. Fair surprise that Calgary did and Edmonton did not. Aaron, first you, please, buddy. I mean, were you surprised, you know, even though Calgary made all kinds of noise, made all kinds of moves, won the last game against Edmonton, and they really did look like they were in an uptick, and it did look like, you know, when you have a team that finishes with the record that Edmonton did, it's hard to say they had a, you know, a tough season. How would you review Calgary and Edmonton season and reflect on the result? How did you see that victory by Calgary? Surprise?
I was actually a little surprised given the fact that Edmonton had been losing games to them on a consistent basis. I thought they would have been more able to pull it together for this game being as important as it was. I mean, during the second game on the 16th, they played shutdown defense on Calgary in the first and second quarters of the game. They only allowed Calgary 14 shots. which was amazing. I mean, they staked themselves to a 12-6 lead by half. And pretty much, for lack of a better term, just kind of coasted from there. I mean, they laced Calgary 8-2 in the first quarter, just destroyed them, set the pace for the rest of the game. But I'm really at a loss as to explain what happened, because they took the first part 15-13 and then turned around and Calgary pots two on six shots on Aaron Bold in the minigame, which is just, you know, puzzling to me, because he played so consistently and so well all season. It just seemed like he kind of went to pieces, which is odd, because, I mean, the dude's in shape. You know, he works hard, he plays hard, he's got his own fitness company. It just kind of struck me as strange that he would fall apart so completely. Like,
Aaron, would you not agree that you know, emotions can be very tiring? You know, this is a team that rode very high for very long. And we talked about this at the beginning of the season, that it could be an option, it could be a result that would be unsatisfactory from Edmonton's perspective, where almost having all those, what was it, 14 or 12? Was it 12 or 14 victories in a row? 12, I think.
14.
14, was it 14 in a row?
14 in a row, yep.
Yeah, okay. A team goes 14 in a row, you know, out of the gate. You know, we're not even talking 14 in a row during the season. We're talking 14 in a row, 14-0. The emotional devastation of losing that game, I think, basically took them over. And there wasn't enough time left for them to gain their confidence back. I know that might sound silly and petty on my part, but I think it was such a long streak that they didn't have enough time to recover from the end of that long streak. And it seemed like they were having difficulty, not just with Calgary, but with other teams as well. You know, I mean, they played so well, it almost worked against them, don't you think, Aaron?
Well, I'll be honest, I think I'm relieved in the way that they didn't play Colorado, because it might have been worse.
Really?
Because towards
oh,
the end,
my.
Colorado was the team that handed them their first loss.
Mm-hmm.
And they were Colorado was definitely picking it up as the season wore on. Colorado started to improve their play. Granted, they brought in the new coaching staff, which I think helped as well. But at the end of the day, unfortunately, Edmonton, despite their stellar season, fell just a little bit short. And while I'm sure it's disappointing for Edmonton fans, at the same time, it's a great sign for lacrosse in Edmonton. You know,
Gary.
No,
go ahead. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
Okay, I was just going to say, they built a very strong foundation here, and that foundation can last for years.
And hopefully it will.
Yeah.
Gary, your opinion on the pratfall that it appears that Edmonton took, or was it more Calgary just played that much better as the season progressed?
I think it was Calgary playing that much better as the season went on. As we know, that Calgary had a little bit of a slow start, but they sure picked it up midway through towards the end. And they carried it right on through into the playoffs. And they did just enough to get by Colorado, just enough to get by Edmonton. And now I would be scared that they might do just enough to get by Rochester. They seem to have that knack of just having enough. They remind me of the New England Patriots of the early 2000s. They never blew anybody out, but they did just enough to win the games and win the Super Bowls. And now we have Calgary doing the same thing here. They have plenty of scoring. If their defense can stay in line, and they have good goaltending and good backup goaltending, the sky's the limit for them. Now, it all depends on the game plan that Rochester has to try and shut them down, but that's why we watch the games.
Absolutely. Rocco, define for us the activity that took place this season in regards to Edmonton and how they ended up losing, and were you surprised that Calgary beat them in that Western final?
I wasn't surprised. I said this in the beginning of the second round. Calgary was going to take Edmonton out. They have the experience. They have, you know, the knowledge. They have the veteran leadership on that floor. And I said if Edmonton wanted to have any opportunity, any chance of winning the series, they would have to win that first game in Calgary. And they failed to do that. Calgary won that first game. Then you turn around and you go into Edmonton and you're thinking, okay, Edmonton's on their home floor. They'll come out. They'll win the game. They jump out 8-2 in the first quarter. They set an NLL mark for 5 goals in a minute and a half. No team has ever done that in now this, the 28th season of the Indoor Lacrosse League. 5 goals in 90 seconds. I mean, come on. That's just, you know, absurd at times. You know, it's just unreal. But their downfall was that they took their foot off the pedal. They kept the 6-goal lead into the third quarter. But then they were outscored 7-3 in those final 30 minutes. And that gave Calgary all the momentum they needed. Okay, Calgary got the game as close, if I'm looking right here, as close as 14-13 until, you know, they put in an empty netter with 14 seconds to go. So the momentum was clearly on Calgary's side going into that, the 10-minute minigame. And at that point, when you have players like Sean Evans, Dane Doby, Curtis Dixon, Jeff Shatler, you have players like that, it's going to be hard to beat them. I mean, yes, Edmonton has Mark Matthews, but who else do they have as a big finisher? You match up the offense, like I said, you have Dixon, Doby, and Evans right there, those three. Edmonton side, you got Mark Matthews. Okay, and you could throw in Zach Greer, but who else is really in there that can match up with the three on Calgary? And Calgary just did what they had to do. They came alive during the regular season. They kind of almost did what Rochester did. They kind of laid low and just let things just build up, you know, for them. When Calgary saw that, hey, we're not going to win the division, they went ahead, they played their style of game while not risking getting any injuries. So when the playoffs came around, they knew they were a 2-seed, and they were either going to be playing at one time when the Stealth were still competing for it, the Stealth or the Mammoth. And they just, you know, took it from there. And now they went ahead, they took care of Edmonton, and now they're on their way to the finals again.
And that concludes our opinion on Calgary and Edmonton. Well, no, I didn't get my say. Here's what I'm going to say about Calgary and Edmonton. We saw it coming. You know, Rocco and I had plenty of opportunities to discuss the manner in which Edmonton was falling and the manner in which Calgary seemed to be, I don't know, coming out with a lot of fury and a lot of... When I saw the first game between Calgary and Toronto, I think I can fairly honestly say, aside from the fact that I'm a Rock fan, a Toronto boy, I think it was Calgary's worst game of the season, in my opinion, only because of when it happened. And it took them a while to overcome, you know, that which was their season at that point. But they seem to peak at the right time. You know, there's nothing fans can wish for more, organizations can wish for more, coaches, players, that you peak at the right time. And this Calgary team has peaked at the right time. Conversely, the team that they'll be playing in the championship, if I can just throw this in, because it is the difference between the two teams, Rochester has adapted a way of playing consistently all season. You know, they might have gone up and down, but never much up, much down. They've been pretty even keel. Calgary, on the other hand, has really picked up the pace. And let's remember that Edmonton wasn't a pushover. And the ordinariness of Edmonton was first established by Colorado, whom, by the way, gave fits to Calgary in the Western Final. It was not a walkover for Calgary. Calgary came very close to losing that game and losing the opportunity to beat Edmonton. And if we can, would you guys agree with me that it was that close? And again, I'm painting a picture of the competitiveness in the National Lacrosse League. I talked about it in the East. And I can honestly say, again, and probably even a little stronger in the West, the evenness between the teams and their ability to win. First of all, Aaron, what do you think? I mean, you take the three teams, any one of them could have won and been in this position to play for the championship and represent the West. Would that not be fair?
It would be entirely fair to say that. Vancouver had an off season. I really, truly expected better of them. I mean, they went to the Champions Cup twice against the Rock back-to-back. You know, I expected a little bit more from them in that regard. However, again, it's like freight elevators passing each other, you know, in a big building. You look at the way that Edmonton kind of tailed off, and you look at the way that Calgary and Colorado both picked it up. That, I think, watching Calgary and Colorado duke it out heading into the playoffs was, I think, some of the more entertaining lacrosse positionally. So, in that regard, the West has been a lot of fun to watch.
Totally. Gary, your opinion?
Well, yeah, if you take the last six or eight games of the year and just eliminate those first 10, Colorado has probably got, if not the best record in the West, one of the best records in the rest with Calgary, because Edmonton had a couple of losses in that little stretch. So, you know, Vancouver, yeah, they had an off year. They've been in the finals three of the last 5 years, or three of the last 6 years. They're not too shabby, I think. You know, I expect a lot coming into next year. But the West always had exciting games. Nobody was going to get blown out anywhere. There was always, you know, you talk about parity in a league, and this is what shows it totally.
Yeah, we've seen great examples of parity. I mean, even if you're one of the teams that's on the outs, okay? The one other thing I'd like to say about the teams on the outs, if we can add this as well, and before I get to Rocco and his opinion, you know what, let's go to Rocco, and then I'll talk about, I'd like to talk about the teams that didn't make the playoffs. But Rocco, first, your impressions of the Western Division, and really, it is that tough, and comment based on what I've asked and the comments that Gary's made about parity.
Well, I mean, we talked about Edmonton winning 14 in a row. Okay, they come out, they go 14-0, and, you know, I said it on my show, and, yeah, the times I've been on, you know, your show, I had the privilege to be on here, you wonder how they're going to handle the adversity when they lose. If they lose, you know, a game here, if they lose two in a row, if they start losing it now with four games left in the season, is it going to affect them in the playoffs? You know, is, you know, losing two out of your last three or two out of your last four games enough to, you know, you have enough time to kind of, I guess you could say, recoup and, you know, do whatever patchwork is needed to, you know, to continue a winning streak in the playoffs, which is where it counts. I mean, you go 16-2, okay, and it's basically all for naught right now. I mean, they're, you know, out golfing with the other teams who didn't even make the playoff run, so to speak.
What happened? What happened? They were going so well, right?
Yeah, they were going well, and I think what may have happened is once they went ahead and they clinched the best overall record, once they got that 14th win, just like in this game against Calgary, they took their foot off the gas pedal. They went, they were 14-0, and at that point, it locked up the best record in the league. Because even if and Rochester did do it, Rochester would win 14 games, the advantage would still be Edmonton because they beat them both times head-to-head this season. So they basically took their foot off the gas pedal, and, you know, they lost the one game to Colorado, and then they lost the game to Calgary. And that gave Calgary enough momentum, you know, gave them the encouragement to say, hey, look, we can beat these guys. you know, when we beat them on their own floor. We can do this. And that's just what Calgary did. And I said it before, Calgary is like a lion. If you put a piece of raw meat in front of them, you're done. They're going to go after it, and they're just going to pick you apart piece by piece.
And they did that.
And that's exactly what they did. Yes, they ended up 12-6. They ended up four games behind them for first place. But that's not what matters now. What are they doing this weekend? They're hosting game one of the 2014 Champions Cup. What's Edmonton doing? They're going to be sitting back probably watching the Champions Cup. To me, I'd
absolutely
rather go 12-6 and be in the cup final than worry about going 16-2. And they just, like I said, they took their foot off the gas pedal. I mean, they had a great year. But they do need a finisher. Other than, you know, Mark Matthews and Zach Greer, they need to get that other finisher out there to, you know, that they can go to.
Absolutely. And I think Calgary, you know, proved that you can turn things around. Unfortunately, for Colorado, they couldn't turn things around fast enough. But the worst story here has to be Edmonton, who, like the police station that had their toilet stolen, they no longer have anything to go on. You know, it is something that happens, and it has once been said that how do you know the job is done? And when do you know the job is done? On the drive home. Unfortunately, Edmonton didn't wait to stop playing until the drive home. And that's the point that I'm going to drive home, is that, you know, a game is played, a season is played, and it's only played between the lines and only when the referees blow the whistle. But you really do, and it's hard. It's hard for a lot of teams to play from the first whistle to the last whistle. And Edmonton, unfortunately, didn't do it, didn't know how to do it. And I hope for their sake that, you know, because they did a great thing for their fans. They really raised the excitement level in Edmonton. And they, you know, helped Calgary fans to have something to cheer about. Let's move on to what we talked about in the East Division. How much did coaching have to play in this? And I'll start with you, the last guy up, of course, that being Rocco, in as far as coaching plan. Was the coaching plan, did it have any effect on the final result?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you look at Calgary's coaches and you look at Edmonton's coaches, you just have to look at the experience. The experience itself, I don't think there was really much planning, much that needed to be done on the Calgary side with, you know, the coaches. They probably just went into the locker room, went into the practices and said, look, guys, you know, we're up 1-0. We know what we need to do. Let's go out there. Let's just take care of business. Let's play roughneck lacrosse. Let's do, you know, do what's needed. We need to play 60 hard minutes. We need to win the game. And, you know, I'm pretty sure when they lost that first game, 15-13, like I said, they got the momentum back. You know, even though they lost, within that two-minute period of time, I don't think it was enough for Edmonton to kind of regroup, you know, for that to really prepare themselves, to kind of, like I said, weather the storm on it,
right,
the way, you know, Calgary came back on them.
Gotcha.
You know, it's just the thing of experience. Now, you know, looking forward to 2015, I'm not going to get off topic, but Edmonton has the number 3 pick in the draft this year. So you can look at them really getting a top player, and they may get that sniper, I mean, for that team. So, you know, we may see a stronger Edmonton team when you come into next season. But, you know, like I said, as far as the coaching, you know, just look at the coaching staffs, not taking anything away from Edmonton. But you just got a ton of experience behind that, the roughneck bench. And it's just a matter of the coaches just looking at the guys and saying, you know, it needs to be done. And they went out and they did it. And they won it, the mini game, without Jeff Snyder, and they came almost within sweeping it without having Jeff Snyder taking their face-offs.
I don't want to talk about face-offs. I don't like talking about face-offs. Okay, Gary, you want to pick it up from there, my friend?
Sure. Yeah, Rocco hit the nail on the head because you take a look at just the players' experience on Calgary as well as the coaching. So basically, they just have to look at each other. Everybody knows what's what. The other interesting thing is we talked about the five Edmonton goals in a 90-second span. If you take away the empty net goal at the end of the game, the last five goals were scored by Calgary. So Rocco, again, is dead on the money there. The momentum was totally, totally with Calgary. And they rode it through their mini game, and here they are. They just knew how to pace themselves and, you know, when to pull all the stops out.
And they did a great job of that. Aaron, your opinion as we move along.
You know, you mentioned it before, Frank, of doing just enough necessary to win. Calgary did what they needed to do in the first game, and that was nullify Edmonton's home floor advantage. Home floor advantage here was them, you know, playing in Edmonton for the second time, for the second game. So they did just enough to make sure that they could get themselves to a mini game where they could take them out. And when you look at the coaching staff on Calgary, you got guys like Kurt Malosky, Bob McMahon, Bruce Codd, and Chris Osmond. Codd's won man cups before. You know, he played with Arizona, he played with the Toronto Rock, played with the Roughies. Bob McMahon's won titles with Canada's gold medal winning team in the 2003 World Indoor Lacrosse Championships. I was there to see that. That was awesome. You look at the Rush coaching staff. Derek Keenan's a good coach. That Jeff McCollum, who I've never heard of before, and Jimmy Quinlan, who retired 2 years ago as the defensive coach. There's not a lot of experience there. That's the issue. And so you look at the way that the Calgary staff and the Calgary team is set up. They're much better equipped to deal with this than Edmonton was, and it showed by the end of the game.
So experience was the deterrent in as far as to success for Edmonton. They might have fallen short. And essentially, I guess, I hope I'm picking words out of all three of your mouths. And I think it'd be fair to say that Edmonton's team went on a run like a young team with talent and the ability to ignore failure and avoid failure as they did in those first 14 games. And I think that's the reason why they went 14 straight. They didn't really know what they were doing. I don't mean, and I hope you guys understand what I mean by that. They weren't blown away by how important what they were doing was, how historical it was. And I think when they lost, they essentially, being a young team, including the coaches, as you're expressing, Aaron, it came home to roost. And it was very difficult for a young team to get back their confidence. And it really hurt them, I think, when they lost that game. And I believe, and I agree with Aaron, where the youthfulness of the coaching was unable to deal with it in a controlling emotional situation. In controlling an emotional situation, I think it was very emotional when they had that first loss. And it was bound to happen, but I really don't think they recovered. And I think, Aaron, thank you for highlighting probably one of the reasons why they didn't. And there's a lesson to be learned by the coaching staff. We all have to go through it. That's the beauty of youth. Youth is the opportunity to learn what you use when you get older. And good for them, 14 straight. Too bad they couldn't make it one of those memorable seasons that no one will duplicate, you know, go 18-0 and then win the championship without a loss. That will have to wait for another day, you know, a complete clean slate. But, you know, they did a great job, and unfortunately they fell short. And let's not forget, and I'm hearing it from you three, and that is that Calgary earned this victory. This was not one that was laid at their doorstep, and all they need to do is open the door and pick it up. It's not like FedEx was at the door. They worked very hard to make it happen, and they need to be congratulated and congratulations to them. And their game plan did, I agree with you guys, I think we all agree, the game plan for Calgary won out, and Edmonton, unfortunately, couldn't undo the game plan that Calgary had. And that's why Calgary is moving on to play against Rochester. Now, let's talk about the offense of both teams, plus, minuses. We'll start with you, Gary, on the offensive side of the ball. Plus, minuses in your mind?
I think both teams are very, very strong offensively. I might give the edge slightly to Calgary, just with everything is working so well, so consistently for the last half of the year that they're just a well-oiled machine. Not that Rochester is any slouches, but, you know, they have their set three, and I'm not sure if Dawson's going to be playing. I haven't heard any injury updates about him this week.
Concussion.
So I'm not really sure if he's going to be in there. So I give the edge to Calgary in the offensive department.
Fantastic. How about you, Rocco?
You know, I'm going to say the same thing that I said with the Edmonton game. If Rochester needs to win this game. They need to win the opener. Calgary is a very strong team. They have, you know, the three-headed monster, I'll call it, you know, with Doby, Shatler, and Evans out there. But then you've got to look at Rochester. You got Palace, you got Jameson, you got Keogh, and, you know, if Dawson's in the mix, you put him in there, you got Joe Walters. You know, you really have, you know, I guess you could say a plethora of scoring opportunities there. And it's just going to matter. It's going to come down to the defenses, and it's going to come down to face-offs. I know you hate that word right now, but it's going
to
come down to
face-offs.
If Snyder's in the game, is he going to, you know, are they going to be able to get those extra possessions and beat Matt Vince? I mean, Rochester's going against Mike Poulin. Poulin runs hot and cold. There's not like a set, I guess you could say, set dial. You know, with Poulin, if he's on his game, he's going to play spectacular.
There's an opening. There's an opening in his game, like a five hole in his game,
yes,
that you can exploit.
And if Rochester exploits it, Calgary's in trouble.
And you know what? You're right. And you know that's the thing about that's the beauty of sport and the beauty of lacrosse and. You know, we spend so much time on the edge of our seat hoping an outcome will happen based on whatever it is that we think is the important and crucial point of the game. You know, I mean, you're making fun of my comments about face-offs, and I thank you for that because you're obviously acknowledging at least what I care about. I'm not sure whether you're making fun of me, but you're allowed because you're my friend and a guest on this program. But, you know, to be sincerely honest about this. You're right. You know, like, as much as these goaltenders and as much as any player plays, you know, offense is all about, you know, build up and conversion. And we can joke or make fun of the situations, right, Aaron, where, you know, as a goaltender and one that's pretty porous, am I going to this well too often? And porous is a pretty good word when talking about water.
You know what, Frank? I don't mind carrying water for your shortcomings.
I like how you picked that up, my friend. Hey, listen, all kidding aside, there is not a better guy in the world that I want to be associated with than Aaron. So for you morons out there who actually think I'm seriously running Aaron, you have no idea who you're thinking about and who I'm talking to. Aaron, you know, I'm just having fun. You care so much about goaltending. You care so much about being a part of the best kind of lacrosse that you can play. In fact, you're a very proud goaltender. And in fact, last week, the show, you had an opportunity to play goal in a situation that you've been trying to play. And you succeeded in that. My friend, I want to congratulate you on that at this moment because I might as well be nice to you while I'm being nasty. But don't expect this to last very long, okay? This is just a short visit to the Aaron, you know, applause forum. But offense and goaltending are basically the same beast. It's just a question of which part of the beast you get. You can either get the lips or you can get the hoof. And, you know, as a goaltender, you get to decide. You have more control than anyone else in as far as how you play your game. Because honestly, goaltending is all about mechanics, isn't it? And therefore, offense is about exploiting that, you know, the mechanics that are missing and/or the style that you should be playing not being played, right?
Exactly. I mean, it is a very, very give and take. If they see one thing on the rush down the floor and they see another thing the next time they come down the floor, they're going to try to exploit what they perceive. So it's a very give and take. It's a symbiotic relationship between offense and goaltenders. You'll have enough defensive bodies to plug some of the holes, but what it really comes down to looking at this series is you're looking at Aaron Bold versus Mike Poulin. You're looking at Mike Poulin versus Matt Vince. I'm sorry about that. That is going to be the story.
Well, we're not talking about the series coming up yet. We're still talking about the offense and defense of the game between Calgary and Edmonton. The offense, very quickly. Hopefully we'll have a couple of minutes to talk about the upcoming series. A short time about that. I'm sure we'll be able to machine gun that one. So what do you think? If we need more time, we'll take more time. What do you think of the offense in that Western final?
I thought it was absolutely awesome to watch, and at times kind of frightening to watch, because these are two teams that really managed to play well against each other. They played to their strengths, and they played to their weaknesses too. I mean, you look at how the game turned out. It wasn't necessarily the result that Edmonton would have wanted, but I'll take it. I'll admit to being wrong.
There
too,
you go.
Because I
okay,
totally said Edmonton was going
to
walk away with it, but.
I'll admit
to being wrong. I don't mind doing that every once in a while.
Flip it over to defense now. What made the defense, again, the goaltenders are a key component in this area. You know, the defenses look good. Goaltenders can make defenses look good. But on a defensive posture, what was the difference here in this game? Edmonton, Calgary, Western Final.
I mean, the real difference, not for the mini game, for game two of the series was the fact that Edmonton locked down Calgary for a half to get the lead that they did, and that's pretty much what it boils down to, Frank. I know you and I had talked about this before this game
and
is
we'll
a game
talk
of
about
runs.
It again. And we'll talk about it again. Gary, how about you, bud?
Well, like I said, Calgary's defense, when they're disciplined, are the best in the league, or one of the best in the league. Their problem is sometimes they get undisciplined. And when they start taking dumb penalties, they create all kinds of problems for themselves. So they have to make sure that they stay disciplined through both of these games this coming weekend and next week. They did a really good job of keeping themselves disciplined throughout the Edmonton games, especially in the second half of the game, to get themselves back into it and through the mini game. Now, granted, there's a little more leeway in the playoffs. You're going to have to, you know, commit assault, I think, before something major is going to happen. But they still have to be able to keep that discipline and keep that strategy that they're going to have before the game.
Yeah, they're going to have to keep that going, and it's going to be difficult, to say the least. Rocco, the defense, what part did it play in the victory for Calgary over Edmonton?
It played a huge part. I mean, they just, you know, when the offense gave them that momentum, they just put it on lockdown. I mean, you weren't getting by Calgary's defense. You weren't even getting past their transition game. I mean, they were just solidly on top. I mean, you know, scoring 7 out of the last 10 goals, and like, you know, Gary was saying, other than that empty netter, they basically scored the last 5 of that game. And, you know, to score 5 goals right there, you have to, you know, chalk a little bit up, you know, for the defense, because the defense is holding off the other, you know, the offense for, you know, for Edmonton. I lost my train of thought there for a second. That's just how, you know, Calgary is, and they're going to have to, you know, do that when we start talking about the finals here. Calgary, like I said, they could just flip a switch whenever need be, and, you know, there it is. Either the offense is coming up big or the defense is going to come up big and make Poulin look like a superstar, and they basically did.
Rocco, flip it over to special team. What factor did special teams have in this series?
Ooh, I mean, the whole entire series.
In your mind,
in
this series, the two games, you know, that Calgary won, their special teams, just quickly, did they dominate, in your opinion?
They, they, they didn't really dominate. Not in the, I know.
So it wasn't a factor. It wasn't a factor.
No, I mean Calgary went 2-for-7 in the second game.
Cool.
Edmonton was 3-for-8. I mean, you know, they both killed all five penalties.
So it was a soft.
Yeah, I mean it was kind of
okay.
You know, it kind of went
both
ways.
Let's ask Gary. Gary, soft for the special teams?
Yeah, I think so. I don't really think that they were really too much of a big deal in this thing. I think their transition had more to do than their special teams.
Okay, fair. And we'll get into that. We'll get into that as well. So the transition. So Aaron, so you didn't think that it was a factor, special teams, and
no,
if so,
when you look at the penalty minutes, 20-18, and you look at the effective chances, 2-for-7 and 3-for-8. Basically, it's a saw off. It's a jump ball.
Perfect.
For lack of a term. But I think
Perfect.
We're all in agreement here on this one.
Yeah, that's good. That wasn't a big factor. So we pretty much have, other than discuss the Western Division very quickly, gentlemen. We're running out of time, but that's okay. We'll fit it all in. The Western Division. I'll start.
She said.
The Western Division, as far as I'm concerned, the story early was, of course, no one can deny that Edmonton went 14-0. The other story, I think, was that Colorado came out of the gate so slowly. Calgary, you know, they were playing well enough to be a concern, not for first, but at least for home, you know, floor advantage in the first round. We won't even talk about the other teams. It's almost like they laid down because, you know, they're just basically collecting draft picks, and their future is in what happens in the draft this year for the other team. And so, you know, in my opinion, the year in the West was very interesting for different reasons. When we counted our chips, it was amazing. It was amazing how close, you know, each team was. Of the three, anyway, that made it to the playoffs, to making it to the final. How do you feel about that, Gare?
I agree. Like I say, without the slow start from Colorado, I think there would have been more of a battle for second place. And I thought Calgary had just an absolute fantastic second half. You know, I think they were the class of the West for the second half. Unfortunately, Vancouver was nowhere to be found all year. So basically the playoff structure was already set. But
yeah, and it really did look like Vancouver was only interested in collecting draft picks and making, you know, that making their move next year with great young players.
Oh, I think so. But with the other three, you know, like I say, without Colorado starting 2-6, I think you have a neck and neck thing going on for second, and who knows what would happen.
Absolutely.
I think the best team throughout and the best team down the stretch is actually going to the finals.
Aaron, your opinion on that, on the Western Division and how it played out?
Beginning of the year, I know that I'd seen Edmonton building for a while, and I wasn't surprised by them taking first at all. I am glad the Minnesota set a new league record with 14 wins. But you looked at the way that Calgary collected themselves, and you look at the way that that Colorado collected themselves to make a run for second and third place at the end of the season and make that battle truly interesting. This actually was a really, really good season for fans in the West because it showed just the incredible, again, parity in the league, and it showed just how awesome it can be when everything starts to click for teams.
Absolutely. So now we can discuss the game at hand, the game that we'll all be watching come this weekend. It is the front leg of the championship series. And, well, first of all, Gary, how important is the home game?
I think, well, it's been shown so far to be very important. Buffalo won their home game. Calgary won their home game, and I think everybody's won their home game, haven't they?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And the difference was, well, actually, no, because Well, anyway.
Well, the mini game's a whole different thing, but I think
exactly. And that
everybody
was the
won
hair
their
splitter.
Whole game.
Yeah, that was their hair splitter. And the point is, I guess, why I was jumping in, and I apologize. The reason I was jumping in is because, you know, the home floor advantage is important. You work for it. But also, we saw two different results. We saw Calgary winning their home game in the semifinal, if I can call that, the Western final. And we saw Buffalo win their home game in the Eastern semifinal. And unfortunately, the final result didn't reflect Buffalo's mastery of Rochester at home, as did the Calgary result, which did show their mastery of Edmonton. So winning the first game isn't a guarantee by any stretch. But if nothing else we've learned in this season and in the games that we've watched, momentum plays a big part, doesn't it, Gary?
Sure it does, and it also changes strategy. If you've lost that first game, your back's against the wall. If you've won that first game, now do you? If you are losing in the second game, do you rest players? Or do you try and keep going and keep going and keep going? And, you know, risk being gassed for that 10 minutes.
And it brings out a whole different strategy. Yeah, and we've experienced and witnessed, we have witnessed the fact that it can work well and it can work poorly. Unfortunately, you don't know until you try how it'll end up. So, you know, hindsight is always 20/20, isn't it, Aaron?
Oh, most definitely.
So, as far as you're concerned, home floor advantage for the first game, you got to win it because you're going on the road?
Oh, yeah, I think so. If you're going into the other team's rink, you should be up 1-0 because it's a really, really big challenge if you're down 1-0 going into the Wolf's den, so to speak, to try and pull out that and the minigame.
Aaron, how about you?
Yeah, no, the importance of the first game, even if it's on the road, can never be overstated. The Nighthawks are going to want to come out hard. They're going to want to come out fast. They're going to want to come out and establish dominance on Calgary's floor. They're going to want to take it to them at the Saddle Dome and make them nervous to come into the Hawks' Nest. I mean, the Hawks' Nest, the Blue Cross Arena, is hard enough to play in at the best of times. But if you've already had your ass handed to you by the team that you're going to be playing the next week for the championship game, it's going to make it just that much harder to win.
Absolutely. And, of course, Rocco?
Yeah, I mean, Rochester is going to need to go in there and really take to Calgary. If they are to lose this game, they can't have it where they lose by 4 or 5 goals like they did in Buffalo. That they cannot do. So they need to go in there, control the game. When they played them earlier in the year, they were up 9-6 until Calgary went on a 5-goal run in the fourth quarter. And Calgary ended up defeating Rochester in their only meeting this year. So they have played them tough in the Saddle Dome. But I think if Rochester plays the way that they can play, you know, I hate to say the cliche, Nighthawk lacrosse.
There you go. Well, it's a nice cliche.
Yeah,
it's one that we've heard before and we'll hear again.
Yeah, and they'll come out on top as long as they play their game. And if
the
Jeff
question
Snyder,
is, what is strategy? While you bring that up, I want to make sure we get all these answers in. Yep. We've only got a few minutes left. So the strategy, how do you compare the strategies of the two teams and how will they conflict?
It's going to have to be the defense of the Nighthawks holding off the power of Calgary's offense with their three-headed monster, with Dixon, Evans, Dobie, and even Veltman, you know, that they could just shoot and score basically at will, and they've shown it throughout the season. The defense is really going to have to step up and really, you know, bottle the three or four of them up just like they did in the second game with Tavares and Steenhouse.
Perfect.
They need to keep them at a minimum and then take advantage of any chances given to them.
Aaron, strategy. How do you see it?
Bottle
up
the big on either team. That's the only thing you can really hope to do at this point. When you look at the Rochester Nighthawks, you know that there are certain people you're going to want to contain. And if you don't do that, then you're screwed. Pardon my French. But, I mean, unless you're keying on guys like Cody Jamison, in this case, Joel McCready, who's revealed himself to be a weapon, Corey Vitarelli and Stephen Keough and Johnny Paulus, there's five guys right off the top of my head that I can think of for them that you have to bottle up. If you don't do that, it's going to be a very, very long night. Same thing goes for the Calgary Roughnecks. If they're not on Sean Evans, if they're not on Dixon, Dobie, or Shatler, and to a lesser extent Scott Ranger, it's going to be a really, really long night. I mean, for the goalies in that respect, it'll be entertaining lacrosse to watch. It'll be entertaining as all get out, but it's just not going to be much fun for those tenders of the twine tents.
Gary, now I looked in the French dictionary, and screwed isn't in the French dictionary, so we'll have to say that isn't pardon my French, that's pardon my English. And we always end up ratcheting up the talk here, and Aaron did it in his way. How would you ratchet up in my opinion, the competition will come down to basics, really. When you have two teams that are playing as well as both these teams are playing, Gary, what's going to happen is which one's playing the important part of the game that is hanging in the balance. And I truly believe what will be hanging in the balance here off the get-go, off the hop, will be goaltending. Once the goaltending evens out, if it does, then it's going to be the tenacity of Rochester and the opportunistic behavior and or experience of Calgary, who have been opportunistic in the playoffs. So the strategy will be, in my opinion, as far as Calgary is concerned, is get in close to the net and, expose their goaltender. The other strategy is, unfortunately for Calgary, Rochester will have an easier time of exposing the goaltender. What's your opinion of the strategy?
Well, I think with Calgary, what they're going to have to try and do is jump on Vince very early before he gets settled into his usual way of playing and gets into his zone, is to do what actually Toronto did earlier in the year and just absolutely rock him out of the cage. And, hopefully they'll be able to get Goodleaf in there, and they've had more luck with him as well. But just enough to unsettle him a little bit should be enough. But, we're talking about defenses, and I'm thinking as long as they're staying and playing in their lanes, they're going to make it awful tough on these offenses, and they're going to have to get awful creative.
Well, on the subject of defense, since that's where we jumped, I don't mind working with Gary. I don't dance with Gary, but I do a show with Gary, and he brought up defenses, guys. The defenses, what do they have to do to be successful, Aaron?
Again, the key for any defense is shutting down their big guns, knowing who they are, isolating on them, not being afraid to double-team them, provided you can isolate the weaker player on the floor to leave him open. If you let any of these guys take too many shots, then you're gonna have issues. I mean, in the first playoff series that Rochester played against Buffalo, Cody Jamison had 5 goals on 20 shots. Johnny Paulus had 3 on 15, and Corey Vitarelli had 4 goals on 13 shots. These guys can score. They know how to score. You give them shots, and it's gonna be painful. Same thing goes for Calgary. Dane Dobby in his games had 36 shots on goal and 8 goals. Curtis Dixon had 8 goals on 30 shots. Sean Evans had 10 goals on 27.
It just means that they convert at a high rate, which is important.
High rate. That's the kind of rate of conversion that makes goalies sweat.
We only have a few seconds left, so we'll discuss at this point who you think will come out winning and why. We'll go over a little bit, and for those of you that are listening to the program, as you are aware with Blog Talk Radio, the live portion of the program will end, and it will look like the show ended. Well, it didn't end. All you have to do is re-click again and come back in and join us on the archive part of the thing and just skip forward to the end of the show so that you can listen to what we said here after the buzzer went. And the buzzer just went. So we'll just continue now because I want to finish this and give the guys an opportunity to voice their opinion. Their opinion is very important. And it's mostly more important than anything to me because without these guys, I know nothing. So where we left it was Aaron was talking and blustering about defense and how important goaltending is, and we know why he does that, because insert shot at Aaron here. He's a goaltender. And basically, so basically, you know, defense is a key thing. And you know what? Both these teams have it, Rocco. Isn't that fair? I mean, they both have great defenses. They wouldn't be here if they didn't.
No, they both have phenomenal defenses. And it's you know, like we've been talking about, it's going to come down to it. You know, the Rochester defense with Ian Lord, you know, the Self brothers, you know, Brad and Scott, they need to stay on the hands of Evans, Doby, Ranger, Shatler, Veltman, Dixon. Yeah, they need to stay on their hands. They can't let them extend their arm. They can't, you know, extend their hands to get that, you know, to get that open shot. They have to be disciplined out there.
Absolutely. You're right, and I mean to interrupt you because I'm saying this for Gary's benefit. Gary knows more than anybody because he can hear it often, and it leads to his deafness. My favorite phrase is whack, hack, and slash. And essentially, defensively, as you're talking about, for the novices out there, if you allow a player to use his hands, and you know, that's where all the dexterity is. The arms are more or less to protect the hands, and the more you hack and slash the hands, the less you have to worry about, which is, I think, what you're alluding to, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you stay on their hands, they're not going to be able to control the stick. They're not going to be able to do what they, you know, want to
need
do.
Need to
the,
do.
You know,
what they need to do.
What they need to do with the ball. I mean, yeah, but then again, you don't want to take the penalty either. You know, and I think it's...
We can talk about that as well, because that is going to be a factor. We'll talk about that as well. Aaron, Rocco, we talked about the defense, now the offense. So, you know, you're in there anyway. You're in there in the offense. When you talk offense, you actually are always talking defense. When you're talking defense, you're actually talking offense. But let's look at it from a defensive, an offensive posture. Offensively, what do these teams have to do?
They got to penetrate the middle. They can't force outside shots. They got to work the ball in. For Rochester's point, they got to get it inside. They got to expose Poulin's weakness. Okay, they got to get any type of opening. If he's leaving that five hole open, that's where they got to go. If he's leaving, you know, shoulder, you know, high shoulder, they just have to exploit anything that Poulin is giving them on a shot. If they get second and third chances, you got to capitalize on it. If you don't capitalize on it, you don't deserve to win. I mean, if they get the game to the inside, it's theirs to have. And if Dan Dawson is in the fray of it all, it's going to be tough for Poulin. It really will be.
I agree 100%, and that would be something that, you know, may dictate how the game ends up. Gary, do you concur?
I do, very much so. They're definitely going to have to get inside. They cannot play everything from the outside because they're not going to be very successful. They'll be able to manipulate more from the inside, but it's going to be an awful black and blue kind of game that way. And I'm looking forward to that.
I love black and blue games. Sorry, I had to say that because that's the one thing about lacrosse that lacrosse offers is the toughness. I mean, is just inspiring to watch the duress that a team needs to play through to win, and that is the biggest challenge in lacrosse. Sorry, you really hit a nerve there for me, Gary. I apologize.
Well, that was the point I was trying to make, Frank.
And you can be glad that you were successful.
Oh, good. I can sleep in peace this evening.
Well, not if I come over there with my horn.
You don't even have to make it over here. I'll know it when you're 12 blocks away.
There you go. And you know what? My horn playing and Aaron's goaltending, always in question. All right, continue.
You guys.
I apologize for distracting you, my friend.
Oh, no, no. That was my biggest point there. For Calgary to be successful, they definitely have to be on the inside. Or for Rochester also, they got to get inside. This can't be a game played on the outside things with long shots because it just isn't going to happen. The goaltending is just too strong on both sides.
I hear you, buddy. Okay, so Aaron, you're up next, my friend. Your feelings in regards to this portion of the game, offense.
Well, they have yet to invent a stick that's long enough to allow me to score from the penalty box. So that's the one thing
I have to
remember.
If only, Aaron, you could get that close to a game.
That's the one thing that these teams have to remember is they cannot, for the life of them, take stupid-ass penalties and be sitting in the
box. We're not talking about that yet. Talk to me about offense. We'll talk. You want to talk about penalties, we'll talk about
penalties.
This is
the offense, Frank.
Okay,
it's all there.
You can be the first to talk about penalties. So are penalties a factor in this game? In
penalties
this first
will
game?
Be a factor in this game. And
why? What? That's it? Okay. Jeez, that was a quick turnaround.
It's all about discipline. It's that simple.
Okay, then Gary, penalties factor in these games?
Big time, and it all comes down to discipline, especially Calgary's defense. They play discipline. They don't take penalties, and I think they're successful. They start taking penalties, I think they're not successful. It's very simple.
Rocco.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta agree with Gary. I mean, Calgary stays out of the box, they win the game. Or I should say, if Jeff Snyder stays out of the box, they win the game.
Exactly.
Well, you're picking on Snyder as bad as I'm picking on Aaron. And Aaron's picking it.
Look,
that's the thing, though. Snyder has to make it back into the game first. So.
Yeah,
there
I
you
mean,
go.
If he's playing, I mean, we've seen him enough here in Philly where he just takes stupid penalties, and he's almost as bad as when a player dives across in front of Anthony Cosmo. You get inside of his head, forget it. He's done.
Yeah,
and
I hear you.
If he's playing, I can guarantee you Ian Lord for Rochester will be trying to get under his skin, and Ian Lord is one of the best at doing it. So you got on Rochester side, Ian Lord's got to control his temper as well and stay out of the box. So
perfect.
Yeah, penalties are going to be a big factor in this and the willingness of the teams to actually convert on it.
All right, now, Rocco. The toughest question of the night. Are you ready?
Go ahead.
Brace yourself. Who will win and why?
I knew this question was coming.
I should have been ready for this question. I mean,
yeah, I've been ready for it all day,
I'm going
up and back on it.
Yeah, but that can be your answer as well.
My friend, that can be your answer as well.
It's a pick'em. It really is. And why?
Is.
But why is it a pick'em to you? Why are you having difficulty marrying yourself to one team? What is it about one team that won't let you pick against them? Because that's usually when a person's in the position you're in, it's because you can't bet against somebody. What is it that doesn't allow you to bet against Rochester, and what is it that doesn't allow you to bet against Calgary?
Both their offenses. Rochester has a very young team. Not very young, but they're a young team, and they've been together for the last two seasons with very little change. So they've been into this scenario. They have two championships back to back. That's why they're going for a three-peat here. So they've been together. They could probably go out on that floor with their eyes closed and run up and down that floor and pass the ball to each other and know what's going on.
With confidence.
Yes. With Calgary, you got that monster, the Dobie Evans Dixon monster. Okay, it's just a lot of high-powered offense there. And again, the Nighthawks are going against an Evans brother. 2012, they went up against Scott. Now they're going up against Sean. So they're getting...
There's
the
family connection.
Yeah. It's going to be real tough. If one team can control the other team's offense, that team's going to come out on top. But I think Rochester's going to come out on top on this one. I think it's going to be...
Fair enough.
I think it's going to be
and
like
we're only talking
14,
about game
13.
One. Let's be clear. okay? We're only talking about game one because the beauty of doing a show every week, we get to comment on what will be happening in the proceeding week and talk about what happened in the preceding week. And we'll
and
be able to do the
there.
Same thing next week. And we'll be able to do the same thing next week. Gary.
I'm going to go the other way. I'm saying Calgary's going to win that first game. I think the home floor advantage is going to serve up huge. I think the fans behind them is going to be that little extra oomph that they're going to need. I think that the three-headed monster is going to go crazy. And I think Rochester takes a lot of notes in this game, and that's what's going to make this series interesting. But I think Calgary comes out flying for this game.
Aaron, you may not have noticed, but I went in reverse order of length of participation in the Candid Frank live show, which this is. And, of course, it is the NLL version of lacrosse. You, my friend, have the final say before me.
Well, my prediction is going to be Andrew McBride is going to run into Brad Self in a bar before the game, and it'll be over before it starts.
Oh, my goodness. Please let
what
don't
I
let
see
it
happening is I see
it
being a very close and hard-fought game. However, Rochester is going to end up with a run to close out the fourth quarter and allow them to squeak out of it with the victory by one. That's only for this week's game. So we'll have to see how that goes. But it's going to be very close. These two teams physically match up against each other very well. So it's going to be very exciting to watch. I mean, you've got Scott Self, who's running at a 60% in the playoffs so far, going up against Jeff Snyder, if he's back, and Garrett McIntosh. Now, Jeff Snyder was running at a 71.4% clip in the one game that he played in the playoffs so far. Garrett McIntosh has only been running at 25.5%. So I know that we've always said, faceoffs aren't that important, but it's definitely something to consider. So that's going to determine time of possession. That's going to determine how big of a jump you're going to have on the other team. So, in this case, I'm going to go with Rochester for the first game in Calgary.
And your conversion rate is definitely impacted by your face-off wins, and let's not forget loose ball control, because that's going to be a factor as well with these teams. I agree with you 100%, Aaron. I knew I should have saved you for last because you and I think alike, and that's probably because you've taught me about this game, the 2000 version of lacrosse. My version of Fox lacrosse goes back to the 80s and 90s, so, you know, I've got a big gap, you know, in my understanding of the game. But to share my opinion on this, the championship final, which will be two games and a tiebreaker as we experienced in the semifinals or the Western and Eastern finals. The important thing in this game is that the home team has to win, because the home team doesn't want to go on the road and have to win that game just to force a mini game. One thing we learned about the mini game, it's fast, furious, and every opportunity needs to be converted. There is no such thing in the mini game as patience. So if you're going to go into the other team's barn, and you're the visiting team of this time, the first game, you better win it, because it is way too difficult with these kinds of teams and this kind of situation in this kind of year, where really you don't want to depend on winning on the road a regular or overtime game and then a mini game to follow. It's just too much momentum to build up, and really, this first game between these teams will be the momentum builder. And that momentum builder may make a big difference. And I have to say, I agree with the guys on their way of thinking. Where I may or may not separate myself is that I really do believe that you will be able to build momentum on this first game, even though it's on the road. If you win, what we learned this year is that you could win or lose on the road. But one thing's for sure. You have to win two games. Whether you do it two regulation games or a regulation game and a mini game, totally irrelevant. When you do it, almost as irrelevant. But really, what has to happen is you have to win. And if you want to win a championship, my friends, it's best to start with a victory. That makes it a little easier. But as these gentlemen have said throughout this conversation, get your foot on the gas and don't let go. Everyone, thank you for listening to the Candid Frank Live Show. This is, of course, the NLL version where we talk about lacrosse and the most important lacrosse that we're aware of at this point in the year, this year, of course, 2014, in the month of May, is the National Lacrosse League Championship. Thanks for tuning in. My guest hosts tonight were, as usual, Aaron William, I Won't Let a Goal In, I Promise, Freelance, Gary, I Can Sing a Tune for You, Groob, and Rocco, I Just Cut a Dog So I Could Get Two More Little Puppies Out of It, Granado. My wife is spinning because of what I just said. But in you know, cesarean for a puppy, hey, I'd do it. If it meant I got two puppies, I would do the cesarean, and I congratulate you, Rocco.
It's expensive.
there you go. And I apologize to all the listeners for last week. On behalf of my co-hosts, we had a perfect storm last week. Everybody wasn't available. And for that reason, we had a very abbreviated show. And when it comes to pets, I want to say this, and I want to say this to all of you out there who are listening. There is nothing that brings me more satisfaction than my dog before he died, more sadness when he did. Nothing brings me more satisfaction than my little kitty cat that comes to talk to me when I can't talk to her when I'm on the air and she's looking for her treats. But what I can say is if she didn't come looking for treats while I was on the air here, I would be disappointed. I hope you're as disappointed to know that we only have 2 weeks left in this program, at least in this incarnation, which is, of course, the National Lacrosse League. There will be a game played next week, and it will be on the 22nd of May, and it will determine who wins the first game. It's a best 2 out of 3, and the third game, if there's a tiebreaker required, will be a mini game. Dudes, when I say mini game, I mean mini. We're talking 10 minutes. I mean, this is right in guys' wheelhouse. You know what I mean? When we're asked to perform, 10 minutes is a pretty good time to do it. So why don't you check out the National Lacrosse League, NLL.com, and you will be able to watch the first game in the championship round. And I'm telling you, folks, if nothing else, if you paid attention from the beginning of this program, if and or but is what the NLL is all about. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. My name's Frank Stanishi for Aaron William Freeland and, of course, Gary Grube and Rocco, the dude from Philadelphia. I don't know. I'm not sure I like working with people from Philadelphia. That's America. No, just kidding. Anyway, it's just a reputation I'm developing, and it's totally inadvertent. But it is what it is. Thank you for tuning in, everybody. This has been Candid Frank Live on Blog Talk Radio. We hope to hear from you again. And if you listen to this part, it meant that you restarted the icon. Congratulations. You know how to listen to this program on archive. And there are a lot of other shows. This is like the 20th NLL show. So if you want to be amused by people who don't know what they're saying or don't know what they're doing, too bad. These three know what they're doing. But you can listen to me, and that will tell you something about somebody who doesn't know what they're doing. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Until next week, this is Candid Frank Live signing off for another week.